Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 18th through the 20th, 2018, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Enfilade. Enfilade is a flagship historical wargaming convention for the Northwest Historical Miniature Gaming Society. Enfilade is held annually over Memorial Day weekend at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Enjoy the largest historical miniature gaming convention west of the Mississippi at Enfilade. Visit www.nhmgscitadel.com for more information. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhart. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR Podcast Network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 208, Star Wars Armada. So for this episode, we are joined by the one and only Mr. Adrian Benson. Adrian, how are you today?
Doing good, John. Thanks.
Armada, right? It's a game that you managed to kind of bring me into. And you and I, we were talking about what we should discuss for today's episode, and this just kind of popped into my head. It's been out for a while, though. It's not like it's a brand new game, so it might seem a little unusual for us to be discussing it today.
Yeah, no, it's been out for a long time, over a year at least. But it's new to us, so.
Yeah, and like it's part of the whole Fantasy Flight Games series of Star Wars licensed products, and they've actually moved on. I think Fantasy Flight Games is the one behind it, Legion, which is purely minis, but it gets that whole blending of Star Wars and actually painting and assembling miniatures and all that kind of stuff. But Armada is not that. Armada is actually much closer, if people are familiar with, their X-Wing miniatures game.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Or if you have ever played the Fantasy Flights, the Star Trek game, it's closer to that probably than X-Wing. But yeah, same concept.
Yeah, Attack Wing. And it, in some ways, it kind of reminds me not so much of the collectible aspect, but it reminds me of that old War at Sea Access and Allies game put out by Wizards of the Coast. And the reason why I say that is, to me, it has a very Baron Pretzels kind of feel to it. It's a very casual kind of game, not as involved as most naval games are. Because when you're talking about space combat, they tend to be treated as naval games, but just set in space.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah, they definitely do for the most part. I mean, I'm not sure. It's difficult to... How do I want to say? It's difficult to capture like the 3D nature of space combat on the tabletop, I guess. Although a couple of the games from Ad Astra do that really pretty well, but yeah, I mean, any well, I shouldn't say any, but most space games are just World War One battleships, but in space.
Yeah, like you look at Battlefleet Gothic. I think you kind of get that. The Babylon 5 game, that was Mongoose, I think, put that out. It's very much that kind of feel to it. And it just seems like one right after another, they tend to focus that way. A more recent exception, I think, would be the X-Wing miniatures game, whereas because it's focused on a starfighter, they treat it more, in my mind, kind of like Wings of War or Wings of Glory, where you're doing that aerial combat, one-on-one dogfight kind of thing.
Well, yeah, definitely. X-Wing's a good game. I like X-Wing.
Yeah, X-Wing's a lot of fun. And I think one of the best things that you were able to say to me when we were getting together to play Armada was that it has a lot in common with X-Wing, but it actually diverges in some important ways. Do you want to talk about those for a little bit?
No, I didn't particularly. But yeah, I mean, Armada and X-Wing, they...
Go on.
Yeah. They're essentially the same game system. I mean, like the way you maneuver the ships and everything, it's all the same. The way Armada kind of diverges from X-Wing, one of the big ways is that because it's capital ships and not a little fighter, One of the things that you have to deal with is the notion that, you know, some, a big Star Destroyer or something not being nearly as maneuverable as a fighter or even as maneuverable as a smaller ship like a frigate or a corvette. You have to plot your movement in advance. So like for a typical like Victory class Star Destroyer, you have to plot your moves, three moves in advance, what you're going to do. So that makes it a little bit more challenging in that regard. Some ships don't have to, like the CR-90, the Corvettes, they don't have to plot moves ahead of time, but it adds a different, you got to think a little bit ahead. It adds more of a strategic bent to the game, I think, anyways.
No, I agree with you, because a lot of games out there that you play, especially if you're doing something more historical in nature, where you're doing land-based combat and things of that sort, you can react perhaps too quickly to things. So you see it unfold on the tabletop and you're like, oh, I got to send this regiment here. I need these guys over here. I got to move the cavalry up. The artillery needs to shoot this or that or whatever. And then your opponent's like, oh, they're shooting artillery here. So that means they're opening themselves up and I'm going to come around and so forth. And you can't really do that with this, which is something that I absolutely like about it, but it's hard to get used to, or at least I found it difficult to get used to. I know that for anyone who's played, say, Wings of Glory, for example, or who's played X-Wing Miniatures, because it's slightly different, you do have that where you have to plan one turn in advance. So you're like, oh, if I'm playing X-Wing, am I going to move and am I going to do like a hard turn? Do I want to really concentrate on firing? Am I going to do like a loop-de-loop or like what am I going to do? And obviously you're not going to do a loop-de-loop with a gigantic capital ship, because it'd be like taking a battleship and be like, okay, let's do a 180 right on you know, like a roller coaster or something, and you can't do that. But just having to be like, okay, so where are people going to be two turns out or three turns out? And like, how does that play into the turn sequence? So I was actually greatly confused when we played the other day, because I was looking at it, and when you plot out your turn, right, you have this dial. And so you literally go on each dial to point towards a symbol that you want to do that action for that turn. And so there's one where it gives you a bonus for maneuvering. You can move further for a turn, one way or the other, left or right, but it also allows you to change your speed. And I took that to mean I only move when you have it set to, what is it, maneuver? When I have it set to the maneuver icon on the dial. So like I put that, I'm thinking I'm a Victory Star Destroyer. I got guns. I need to sit back and shoot, because it's going to take a while for you to get to me. Once I start moving, I open up my rear and bad things can happen because I don't have as good shields back there. Without realizing, oh, wait, no, you move every single turn.
Yeah, whether you plot maneuver or not, yeah.
And so, like, I ended up just going forward and forward. And I was going, what was it, speed 2, I think, for that particular scenario we were doing?
Yeah, well, everybody, the basic scenario, I think everybody starts at speed 2, but that might actually be the maximum speed for that ship. But whatever, yeah.
And so I was like, oh, look at this, I'm going speedy. You know, I'm zooming out, and I wasn't expecting it. So like I was actually plotting actions that didn't make sense to plot in the beginning, because I was like, well, I'll sit back here, I got some fighters near me, so I'll get my TIE fighters to go and kind of do like a protector screen, and I can control them, and you know, then I'm gonna want to shoot, so I'm gonna want a bonus to my shooting. And the next thing you know, oh wait, I'm probably gonna have to deal with some damage, so I'm gonna repair, and then I'll move. And I was like, oh wait a sec, no, that's not right at all. And like I totally threw myself off. I think for most of the game it took a while to try to recover.
Yeah, I mean, that's to be expected. It was the first time you'd ever played. It was only the third time I'd ever played, so, you know, still getting used to it. But no, it's a good game. I like the having to plan ahead the maneuvers for the larger ships. The other thing that can make a big difference is in the way you usually you'll have little fighters along with your capital ships, and it can be really important how you deploy those guys and how you use them as screens for your for the bigger ships. So there's probably more tactical depth to it than there is for X-Wing. I think I still might like X-Wing better just because of the fighter combat nature of it. I don't know, but both really good games.
Yeah, in a lot of ways this kind of actually feels to me like a board game that you play on a tabletop with minis, as opposed to a real miniatures game. And you're not using actually any board or anything like that, but just like the way that you move and the way you respond, and the use of the templates and everything, it felt very formulaic, akin to something that you would get with a board game trying to replicate space combat, as opposed to a true miniatures game set in space.
Yeah, well, I guess I would agree with that. I mean, it's, I guess, not a miniatures game in the traditional sense. I mean, obviously it uses miniatures, but I don't know. It depends. It's kind of a loose definition anyway. What is a miniatures game? But
well, no, that's true. I've wondered, though, and I don't know if you have any thoughts about this, but I wondered if they purposefully did this because you really get more of a blending nowadays, I think, of board games and miniatures where you, like, people will buy a board game and there's more, quote unquote, miniatures and miniatures components in it than traditional board games where you would have, say, a cube or you might just have a chit or things like that. And even with traditional hex and counter board games, they're moving away from actual counters and towards minis. And so there's, I think you get this fusion more now than ever before of these two types of games and these mediums and companies trying to blend them together. So I wasn't sure if like Fantasy Flight Games was trying to do that because it's popular and really they are a board game company as opposed to a minis company. So this whole like Star Wars thing's kind of unusual for them, although they've had the license for a while. It's a little surprising, I think.
Yeah, I suppose it is. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's clearly not what you call a traditional board game since, like you said, you don't play it on a board, but, I don't know, you got to look at the appeal too. It's like with the game, if the mechanics and everything were exactly the same, but instead of the miniatures, the ship models and everything, you had two-dimensional, like typical die-cut counter ships on a flat ships on a flat plane, would it have the same appeal that it does? Because it's hugely popular. Would it have the same appeal if it was just the traditional board game component? I don't think it would.
No, of course not. A lot of the talk is like after we played and we played with our buddy John, and I think he was really hoping that whereas you played it a few times already and that this is my first time, but like I'm a huge Star Wars nerd, that like you and I would be like, yay, let's buy into this pretty heavily, because he went like full hog on it, which really shocked me.
Yeah, he bought Star Wars Armada stuff instead of paying his mortgage last month, so
we go in the store, right? And he sat at this table in the back at Battleground, and it was great because he saved a spot for us. And I'm like, okay, so we're gonna play Armada. And I thought it's a core set that he got. And I'm like, okay, that's expensive enough. That's $100, right?
Yeah.
And then he has all these totes next to him, these gigantic Rubbermaid storage bins.
Yeah.
Like under the bed storage. And I'm like, okay, maybe he painted things he's going to show us or something like that. Or maybe it was other things. No, they were filled to the brim with Armada ships. Yeah. I was like, he literally just bought the core game like a week or two before that. And
yeah, he hadn't had very long. So
ooh,
yeah,
there it all went.
Yeah, he was all in. He hasn't bought literally everything yet, but he's got a lot of stuff. He's into it. So
it's so unlike him too, which is really the odd thing, because anyone who knows him or plays with him, no matter how much he likes a game, if he's not the one who's initiated it, he's very tentative. So he'll be like, oh, okay, so what do you think I should use? And then he kind of research it on his own, and then maybe he might buy like a unit or something, or like a ship, and that'll be like 6 months or 9 months down the road. Whereas like I go full hog, I buy everything, but I never assemble or paint anything, but like I've bought it all up front. He's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
So like seeing that was quite an endorsement to me, but I think like I love the game, but I think he was probably let down afterwards thinking, oh, like you and I were gonna really go into it as much as he did. And I don't know about you, but like for me there's definitely some hesitation, partly because of the crossover with X-Wing, although I don't think it crosses over enough for me to feel that it's the same game, because it's not different enough, you know. Really, if it came up first, people wouldn't be like, X-Wing's a ripoff of Armada. They'd just be like, oh, look, here's another Star Wars game, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's definitely not it's not a clone of X-Wing. It shares a lot of the mechanics and things, but yeah, it's a different game. I'm not sure if I'm going to buy it or not. I'm leaning towards not buying it, and not because it's not a good game, because it is a good game and I like playing it, but you got to kind of look at, John already bought it. I don't need to buy it. I mean, if I'm going to end up playing it with anybody, it would be with him anyway, or you. And so, yeah.
I looked into it after, you know, after we played that day, because I thought, well, maybe I'll buy some, because I'm always a sucker for any of this kind of stuff. And people like me are why these companies get rich, usually. And I was like, okay, well, let me look and see how much it is. And, you know, if I can get it online or get it somewhere else. And then I started pricing everything out. And then I was looking at it, and I was looking at reviews from like other blogs and people on Board Game Geek and everything. And by and large, the number one reason that people give to buy this game is just look at the ships. They look as good, if not better, than the ones from X-Wing. So you know what quality you're getting into. They don't talk about the rules mechanics. They don't talk about the components you get, the cost. They don't talk about replayability or tournament play or any of that stuff. It's look at the ships, look how cool they are, how much they remind me from the ones that are X-Wing, so therefore it's a good game.
Yeah, if you're going to buy the ships to display them on your desk at work or wherever, then it's definitely a worthwhile investment because they are nice-looking models. And if depending on your situation, I mean, if you like Star Wars, you've probably already bought the game and you don't really need to... You don't care what we have to say about it, and that's fine. I like Star Wars, but I'm not an over-the-top Star Wars fanatic the way some people are. So it's like knowing somebody that has the sets that I can play it occasionally, that's good enough for me. I mean, I do own X-Wing and a bunch of the stuff for X-Wing, which is apparently going to become completely useless here in the near future as they release X-Wing version 2.
Yeah, let's come back to that in a little bit.
Yeah, and I wonder if they'll do the same thing with Armada. Who knows? But yeah, because, you know, they want to enhance the gameplay experience for the players. And, also would you fork us over $60 so that we can give you the templates and things that you need in order to use your old ships with our new and improved system? Yeah, no. So
the main thing holding me back from getting Armada isn't, any problems with the rules or playability or any of that kind of stuff, because I think you're right. I think it's a very well done game. Yep. I actually think I might prefer it to X-Wing. Thing isn't that I think I'd have a lot of fun. I think it's something that, you know, you can get up and you can play with almost anybody pretty quickly. Like your daughter came and I think she really enjoyed it. I think she kind of latched onto it. And
yeah, she did. She said she did. Yeah, it's not a complex game. So
no. And you know, that's nothing against your daughter. It just like it shows that you can get into it pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think all those are great things. It'd be great for pickup game. But like as we're talking and recording, I'm staring at a mountain of unopened X-Wing stuff, still in shrink wrap that I got when it first came out. Blisters of things and capital ships when they were like, let's do capital ships. So like I got a medium transport still in a thing. I got a CR-90 that's huge because it's X-Wing scale, which is broken. And like, so like I got all this stuff there and I see some blisters of Stat Trek Attack Wing. And I know that each time I bought something for those, I thought the same things that I was thinking with Armada, the same feelings. And I know that if I buy into Armada, the same stuff's going to happen. I'm going to then have a new pile.
Yeah.
What's going to be Armada stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm just not going to do it. And I think really the main benefit and the main enticement for someone getting into Armada or X-Wing, as the case might be, isn't the ships, although I think they're beautiful. I think it's if you're someone who likes competitive play, then it's a game for you.
Yeah, it's definitely geared towards that.
I mean, like, that's not something I like, and I know that's not something you really gear up for. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just not my style of play. But if you love competitive play, you want to do tourney play, you want to do league play, you want to do all that kind of stuff, like, it's the game for you. So, like, when we got in and John was telling us a little bit of the rules and you were talking a little bit about the rules, I asked John, I said, so, like, how do you set things up? And he was like, well, this is X number of points, and you do this and that for points. And I kept on hearing points, 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 points. And I said to him, do you have to do points builds? Can you do it without? And he's like, yeah, but then you know you won by the number of points you got. And so I kept on hearing competitive play, competitive play, competitive play.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess so. But at the same time, you got to have some way to be able to generate. Like if you're not interested in competitive play and you want to come up with your own scenarios, you got to have some way to determine, you know, which particular unit is the strengths of the unit so you can build somewhat compatible or equitable forces. So points is just a way to do that. I mean, that said, there's the tournament scene for Armada and I guess X-Wing too, although maybe a little bit less so for X-Wing now since Armada Yeah. I don't pay much attention to the tournament stuff because, like you said, it doesn't interest me. But it's very strong for both of those games. So, yeah, I mean, but that's easy enough to avoid if you just don't play tournaments.
Well, exactly. I do think people love the tourney and organized play. For me, I'd want something more where you can have a scenario, whether you're going to recreate a battle from the movies or the books, whether they're legacy / expanded universe or the new stuff. And that isn't equal points.
No, but that's the thing. And you can do that. And then it doesn't matter what the points are if that's your goal. But that's the same with, you know, any game system, whether it's.
That's true. But the thing is, and I don't own it, so I can't dig deep into the rules. But my understanding from John, which, and I could be wrong, and maybe it exists and you just didn't talk about it, but that the rules don't have anything built in for determining winning or game deciding factors other than points issues. So there's not like nothing built in for mechanics or playability issues regarding, say, like objectives or things like that. So like you look at something like Bolt Action, right, which has a strong organized play thing about it because it's a points build thing. It has built into the rules this whole issue of like you can play games where it's not who killed more stuff, who got more points, it's who got the objective and how does this play more into a strategic or a tactical level as opposed to I just killed more guys.
But here again, you could make up your own victory conditions and whatnot for Armada, whether it's controlling a particular zone of the board or, you know, a particular ship has to escape, whatever. You could modify that and not have it based on points, you know, how many points one side or the other has accumulated. But I mean, I get what you're saying. It's geared toward equal builds, and equal builds, you know, tend to be kind of boring, actually, in a lot of ways.
Do you happen to know, does it have anything built into the rules to allow for like for scenario play? Like you look at a Battlefleet Gothic and it's a points build game. It's an organized play kind of game, but it actually has scenarios and things built into its mechanics for playability where whether you win or lose has nothing to do with how many points you have, how many points you killed or lost or anything like that. So like, I'm about to say something nice about Games Workshop people. Games Workshop thought ahead and thought people might not like to have points be a deciding factor and allow a little more narrative or other kind of influence. Does that exist here? Did Fantasy Flight Games do that? And I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't really know. I didn't read the rules. I assume there must be difference. X-Wing had it was a fairly minimal number, but they had scenarios in the base rules. And then certain of the ship expansions that you bought would have additional scenarios that would come with them sometimes. I know like the Imperial Shuttle, a couple of them did.
Yeah.
I assume Armada has the same.
Okay. I'm hoping, and I mean, one game can't be everything to everybody. And clearly the Fantasy Flight games aren't intended. I think their focus is on organized play and that's perfectly fine. But at the same point, like you can't be like, oh, and you can also do this other stuff, but don't have anything there to support it.
Yeah.
Like just don't include it. Be like, okay, this is a points only game. It's organized play only. This is what it is. Or like if you flip it, you look at a game like Hail Caesar and Black Powder, and they're like, this is a non-points based game. That's what we want it to be. But then they responded to player feedback and players were like, we want points just in case. So they threw points in there because people wanted it. And they had to play around with that because it wasn't a great points build system, but they put it in eventually because people wanted it.
Yeah, they did, because in those particular examples, here's Hail Caesar, Black Powder, a lot of wargaming clubs have bought into those rules. And if somebody takes the time ahead of time to come up with a scenario and puts the forces together, that's great. But if you just show up at the club on Saturday or Sunday and want to pick up game, you really can't do that unless you have some kind of a system to build equitable forces to face each other. So, you know, love it or hate it, point systems are here to stay, and they're kind of necessary.
Yeah, they have their place, and I think when done well and when you have other criteria in place for like how you're choosing opponents and things like that, I think they're actually very helpful and a great asset to have. I'm not against point systems, but I think if you're a company and you're creating a game, Armada, for example, because that's what we're talking about, and if you're having this option for like non-points based stuff, you need to actually be able to fully support it. And maybe they do. I didn't get a chance to look that deep into the rules, but my impression from John was that they don't, that it's simply points kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't know, so I won't say, but I would be surprised if there weren't, maybe not in the core set, but I'd be surprised if there aren't like scenarios available out there. I'm sure there are some online when there's support forums.
Oh yeah, like an FAQ. There must be an errata somewhere. I'm sure they've done a lot of stuff with that.
Yeah.
Now, how much for you, because you said you think you probably, you're on the fence, but you think maybe you're hesitant about Armada being a game for you. How much of a factor are you influenced by this whole X-Wing 2.0 thing?
Oh, 50 or 60% easily, because I can see it being a case. So, for example, in spite of the fact that they were some of the worst models I've ever seen in my life, I'm more of a Star Trek fan than a Star Wars fan, so I really got into Attack Wing, and then they just stopped. So, and now with X-Wing, which is a game that we haven't played it in a while, but we've played it, and it's fun. We enjoy it. We both put a fair amount of money into it, not nearly as much as a lot of folks. But now they've decided that that needs to be revamped. And of course, when we redo this game system, we can't possibly have the old stuff be completely compatible with the new system. So that's going to cost you a little bit extra money if you want to keep using that stuff. So I'm obviously not going to pay for the upgrades there. And yeah, I'm a little bit afraid they'll do the same thing with Armada. Because like I say, Armada's been out for a while now. We should have looked into that before we came on. I'm not sure how long it's been. It's over a year. It's easily over a year. Might even be two or three. God, I don't know. We should have checked. But the point is, it's been out long enough that they might be starting to think, maybe we can get away with version two of this too. So, yeah. And there's other factors. One is, like I said, if it's a game like that, and you know someone who has all the stuff, and the only person you're ever likely to play that game with is that person, what am I going to buy all the stuff for myself? And there's other stuff behind the scenes for me at work. Anyway, it's like, how much more of this stuff do I want to move when I end up moving here in the near future? So that's kind of a factor. So there's a lot of things going into it. But mostly, John's got it. So if we're going to play it, I don't need to invest in it. And I don't trust them not to kind of screw me after I invest, $300-$400 in the base set and some more models, for them to come out with a version two. Where, yeah, if you want to keep using the old stuff, you're going to have to pay us, I don't know, whatever it is for X-Wing, $70 or $80 for a conversion kit so that your old stuff will work with the new system. So, yeah, not buying it, I don't think.
I'm going to do something I don't normally do, and I'm going to slightly defend Fantasy Flight Games for their conversion stuff for 2.0. My reason is something that I've read in one of the X-Wing groups on Facebook, and X-Wing came out in 2012, Armada came out 2015, so 3 years in between them, and so that means Armada's 3 years old now, right? Yeah, and 2.5 or something like that. One of the things I had read was that there was a lot of player response and observation of players, predominantly in organized play, of course, with X-Wing, where the designers and the company felt that they needed to make tweaks to kind of streamline stuff, make things a little more equitable, easier to play, easier to understand, so that way you didn't have to rely on all these rules and riders and all this other stuff, or things that are only in certain expansions, so that they can kind of bring it all together and lower that bar of entry for people, which is a problem I think that a lot of gamers have when it comes to miniatures games, that you have such a high bar for both time, money, and everything to really get into it. It's really impossible for a lot of people, I think, to break into miniatures war games in particular. And I think that they wanted to avoid that with this, because when you look at sci-fi games, they tend to be more accessible overall. They tend to attract a younger audience, and I think Fantasy Flight Games saw that and felt like, you know, that they have a lot of, I'm going to use the term bloat, that they had a lot of bloat going on with X-Wing, and that the only options that would be possible to them would be to pull a Disney and say, okay, all this stuff that happened before is in its own separate universe. It doesn't count, and we're not really doing anything with it. So therefore, you'd have to repurchase everything that you bought, but it would be like version 2.0 TIE Fighter, version 2.0 Millennium Falcon, version 2.0 CR-90, or a cheaper way than doing that would be to have these conversion kits, which I believe have templates and things like that, that then allow you to use your original models, but with the new rules. But each conversion kit only allows, X number of templates and so forth, so that you do have to buy a certain number of multiples of them to cover your collection, depending how large it is. So you could be in for a large bank. I think it sucks, and it's not something that makes me happy like you. I'm kind of worried that Armada is only 3 years younger than X-Wing, and if they're doing this with X-Wing after, what is that, 5 years?
Yeah.
That does that mean in like 2 or 3 more years, are they going to do it with Armada? Or are they going to pull a Star Trek Attack Wing and just say forget it to one of these games or both of them? Or I guess a lot depends on the license. And Disney's invested in the games going well, because anything that does well with the Star Wars IP does well for Disney, and all that kind of stuff goes on. Or will Disney bring it in-house is another concern of mine. So like I agree with you. I am kind of concerned with Armada because of this whole 2.0 thing. I do think there's valid reasons for Fantasy Flight Games to do what they're doing, but like if I was more heavily involved with X-Wing instead of having my pile that I'm staring at, I would be so mad. I'd be like, wait, what do you make me do? And from what I understand, there seems to be a divide in the X-Wing community between those who are really more geared towards competitive play and organized play, who say, oh, this is great because I don't want to buy all new stuff so that I can stay competitive because they got their like 40 copies of whatever so they can min-max things and power game my term, no judgment, and tourney play, compared to those who maybe don't have as much and would want a more level playing field. I mean, like this way, we all have to buy in. So it's kind of like the Magic of the Gathering thing, where if you've been playing for a long time, or if you have more money than God, you can just buy all the really great cards and then buy your way to win all the time.
Yeah.
And if you're new, then you can't. So I think maybe there's some of that push-pull going on here where they're trying to figure it out within the community. But I think like the designers and the company are like, okay, this is our two options here. And I think they chose what they felt probably was the fairer or more equitable of the two that would do the least amount of harm. I think both would harm and not be great. So I don't think it's a case of them choosing like a good option. I think it's a case of them choosing one that's not as bad as the other.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, I can, all valid points, but as a non-tourney guy, yeah, I don't know. I'm not interested in throwing more money so I can keep playing a game that I've already paid for once. Which actually, if you look at it that way, it doesn't affect us because we can certainly keep playing what we have and be perfectly happy with it. But it's just if you want to use any of the new release stuff. But yeah, whatever.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like people who just love playing, say, third edition 40K, who never go past AD&D, or who are just like Pathfinder people or whatever. So they're never going to play the new edition of D&D or any of the spinoffs or whatever. And if you have a gaming community that's invested in that, that's great. I think, you know, we have that currently where people are like, okay, we'll just do what we do and people are chill about it. But the problem is like if people start drifting away from the community or you move or there's a new influx of people, those new people aren't going to want to play that old stuff because they don't have it. They have the new. So there's going to be some sort of give going on there. But maybe that's more a case of something that has to be worked out at a local level as opposed to game-wide. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. But I know I'm not buying Armada. I'm 90% sure of that. That I'm sure of.
It's funny now that we talk about it, despite my looking at this pile of X-Wing, I think, well, you know, how much would it cost me just to get a few things?
Well, it's going to cost you at least $100. That's just for the core set.
Well, if I use our Amazon affiliate link at wargamingrecon.com/Star Wars Armada, which you can also get to by going to our show notes at wargamingrecon.com/WR208. You'll find that link there. I think it's only on like $60 or $70 on Amazon. Oh, I mean, of course, if you have a great friendly local game store that meets all the criteria we've talked about in previous episodes that supports you, supports the community, and so forth, then go there. But if you don't, or if you ever, you know, you don't have a game store, if you have a one that isn't good, then go online. So like $60 for that. And I mean, like places like the War Store and Miniature Market, they do a lot of business and you, I think you get to shop around. So I could probably get away with like $150, $200, but I don't know if it's worth me spending that or not. But as I say this, I'm like, I'm interested in that slightly more than other options that I talked to you about. Looking into some more like GMT solo war games or trying to expand the Red Dragon Inn collection that we have going on because we play that a fair bit.
Yeah, I like Red Dragon Inn. That's a great game. I would encourage you to look at some of the GMT options we were talking about, but that's like, just me.
Well, I was looking at A Distant Plane, but it's out of print right now. And I actually heard that since it uses the whole coin setup of where it's unbalanced forces, it's counterinsurgency kind of stuff, that that one actually tends to be harder for people to get into who aren't used to that style of play, and that Cuba Libre is supposed to be easier. But I think that's also out of print.
It might be, but I know the last time I was up at Hobby Bunker, they had on a distant plane. So, So they may still have it, but you can probably find it. Yeah, that's the problem with a lot of the GMT games. Unfortunately, they're great games, but they're in and out of print. So if you, if you see one that you want, you should probably pull the trigger on it and not wait.
Well, one of the things I like about them, and I think they kind of do it to combat the whole Amazon online retailer thing, because you can get a lot of their games on Amazon. Yeah. So if you're like an Amazon Prime member, you get the free 2-day shipping, you get, the Amazon discounts and all that kind of stuff. But GMT does this thing where I think partly because they don't want to be saddled with a large repository of product that doesn't move, which I know has happened to say like Two Frat Lardies, for example, that they'll get like a zillion rule books and it sits in their hallway and their wives get unhappy. Not just stereotype against what, but like something that they've actually said on this social media. I think GMT is like, okay, we don't want to have this huge investment of money and product and capital and everything. So they do that whole pre-order thing. And if you pre-order, you get a severe discount. Like it's hefty. And so they do that whole, I think they call it a P500 setup. And if you pre-order it, so like it might be a $75 game or a $100 game, and you get it for like say 40 or 50, which is great. And could be even cheaper than you'd get on Amazon. Of course, you have to pre-order it. And then once it comes out for real, if enough people, I think it's... So I was talking with one of the designers the other day, and he told me what the level is. It's, I feel like it's either 500 orders or 1,000 pre-orders, and I can't recall which it is. Do you have to know?
I always thought it was 500, which is why it's P500.
we're going to go to your logic for this one. But if you're not one of the 500 people who pre-ordered, if it's past then and it actually comes out, then you got to pay full price, which could be a downer. But at that point, not that I want to drive business away from going direct to GMT, because in my interaction with them, they've been wonderful. They're actually going to be sending us a copy of a game soon, I think. It's supposed to be coming out in May or June of this year for us to review Hitler's Reich.
Oh, okay.
Which should be a lot of fun because we know the game designer of it. And but like if you wait and it's full price, just go to Amazon and check it out, because you might get it cheaper there too. But I think you might be right. GMT is the way for me to go, I think, as opposed to Armada. But GMT is not Star Wars.
No, that's another thing it's got going in its favor. I just like GMT's games. For the pre-order thing, though, a lot of companies do that. And it's Multiman Publishing, the guys that do Advanced Squad Leader. They do the same thing when they reissue modules, Squad Leader modules, or any of their other games. You can get a huge discount by pre-ordering. So it's worth keeping an eye out.
I'm going to tell you something that actually has kind of helped my itch for Armada and been a soothing salve to be like, okay, I don't need to buy Armada. First, my recommendation, I think, regarding Armada is it's a great game. It's not for everyone. I don't think it's for me. But I think if you don't have any of these things, and if you want to kind of start up a gaming organization going on, whether it's a club or you want to get something going at your friendly local game store, work with your game store. Because if you're going to demo it or you're going to help organize the league, they might actually give you discounts if you really get people to come in and do it and help out. So it can be worth your while. You help grow the community, which is great. You buy in and then other people will buy in. I think you can have a lot of fun with it if you meet those criteria. But like overall, I'm kind of
I would say this. If you like Star Wars, buy the game and enjoy it because it's a great game. It's just, for me, it's not because of what we've talked about previously. It's just, it's not worth the expenditure. That's all. But, if you enjoy Star Wars and don't have access to it otherwise, there's definitely worse things you could be spending your money on. I would go ahead and buy it.
Yeah, I can see that. So, I think officially I'm giving it one thumbs up, one thumbs down, primarily because of the cost factor.
Well, yeah, the cost is an issue. And you can argue that it's worth it because of the quality of the build and all the stuff that you get with it. But that's still $100 out of your pocket if you buy it at your local store.
You still have to assemble a lot of it, which is like an hour or two of your time.
Yeah, there's a lot of assembly involved. And honestly, with Attack Wing and also with X-Wing, that kind of enraged me, to be honest with you.
If you, well, that's fair. If you're paying this amount of money for a pre-painted quote, pre-assembled game.
Well, it's not pre-assembled. They never said that, just pre-painted.
No, but if it's like that style of game, it better darn well be like Wizards of the Coast War at Sea, where you pull the thing out of the blister and you can pop it on the table and play with it without doing other stuff to it.
Yeah, that would be kind of nice. I mean, like the dials, and so there's no reason the maneuver dials and whatnot couldn't be pre-assembled. Because they're all the same.
Yeah.
You know, it's like for X-Wing, there are different dials for different ships. So that might have been harder. But for Armada, it's the same dial for every ship. You've only got four orders that you can give. Just pre-assemble them. Just, you know, you've even got to assemble the movement ruler in Armada.
That is ridiculous. Just beyond ridiculous.
So, yeah, there's no need for that. So anyway,
they could have made a lot more of it more modular, so to really minimize the assembly. And I don't know if they were coming up on their deadline or something at the last minute, and they're like, we got to get it out, and this is the only way they could do it, or what it was.
I don't know.
Cost saving or something. I have no idea, but I agree. It does not make me happy. So between maybe that and the cost, I'm lukewarm about it.
Yeah. I mean, compared to like painting miniatures, the assembly, you know, it's nothing, but it's something you have to do, and it's like, it doesn't interest me. But like I said, I just want to emphasize it. For me, it's not worth the investment of money, but it is an awesome game, and I'll play it again every chance I get. Me personally, I'm not going to buy it. But.
Yeah, like I play it at a tourney, at a game day, at someone else's. Like if John wants to play, I'll play it.
Oh, yeah.
And we're like, okay, sure, dig it out. You bring your stuff, which is another reason why I say that as someone who will carry like totes of minis, but like I don't want to carry 6 Rubbermaid containers full of Star Wars Armada stuff to go and play a game.
Yeah.
Just because like they're bulky, not so much just the ships, but like the way they're done. So even if you unassemble part of it, it's not so great. And then I worry about breakage with things, and I don't know. I have issues with it that like I don't really encounter with X-Wing, partly because it's smaller.
Yeah, it is. I mean, look at all the stuff we got to haul around to play Bolt Action, hauling around a couple of tubs with Star Wars miniatures in it. And, well, of course, you don't haul those tubs around for Bolt Action, though, do you? That's me. But,
well, hey, to be fair, I do have some terrain. I have my own figs.
Okay. Yeah, you do now. That's true. I forget about that.
So, I have all like the Wargaming terrain stuff. I have some stuff from Crescent Root. I mean, it's not that beautiful church that you have, but that's okay. The mats, I get the trees, I get the hills and all this stuff to go up under the mats. I get a fair bit. I mean, not as much as you. We just tend to use your stuff.
Yeah. I mean, transporting the stuff to and from the store, that's not that big of an issue, though, I don't think. But
storing it at home and all that kind of stuff, finding room for it. It's a pain because there's this whole movement now for people to live in smaller places, to live more closely together in a more urban kind of setting.
Yeah.
Urban sprawl is the devil and all that kind of stuff. So generally society in the Western world is kind of moving towards that. And that just means you don't have as much room to store gigantic totes full of Star Wars Armada stuff or Bolt Action or whatever.
Yeah. That's not an issue either because I'm not part of that movement, but you're right. It is a concern. I mean, depending on, you know, you need room for anything, but anyway, beating a dead horse here, I'm not going to buy it, but if you like Star Wars and have the slightest interest in Star Wars combat, it's probably worth your money.
So we had mentioned briefly about, playing this at other conventions or GMT games, for example. And an option for buying that kind of stuff is when you go to a convention, buying it from a vendor, and you can usually get it. A good deal, especially if it's like the last day of the convention, because they don't want to haul that stuff back with them or ship it back or whatever. It gets expensive. So we have, well, by the time everyone listens to this, we will have been at a convention. Yeah. Do you want to talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, if you want to, you lead off.
So by the time you listen to this, we will have been at a convention in Maine named Huzzah. Do you want to talk about it a little bit?
What do you want me to say about it? It's hosted by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They put it on every year. This is the 6th year, 7th year. I'm not sure. I've been to it every year since they started, though, and it's a great con. It's in South Portland, Maine, and mostly war games. They've been expanding a little bit recently. There's more board gaming type stuff. There's still, I don't think there's any role playing.
No, I don't think so.
Not sure about that. I don't believe so. But they're expanding a little bit. Try to attract, make the con more attractive for people to like bring their families and whatnot. So there's board games and whatnot that would appeal to, you know, a broader audience that maybe a historical war game wouldn't. But anyway, we'll be up there. Wow, it's next weekend already, isn't it? Yeah, next weekend. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, May 18th through the 20th. People yep. may have seen us there. Maybe we played a game with you. I don't know, because I'm future projecting. It's always weird with this time travel kind of stuff that, like, because this is coming out so much further after we record. I don't know what's going to have happened.
Yeah.
It's like in those Douglas Adams books where they talk about time travel and they're like, the main problem isn't actually traveling time, it's the grammar. Like, how do you deal with past and present tense? And is there a different tense for all of it? And I always kind of feel like a little tongue tied when we do this sort of stuff here. But in theory, we will have been there. We will have had fun. People may have seen us. We will have done a live recording on the Sunday, May 20th.
In which case you will listen to the live recording before you listen to us talking about doing the live recording in our future, which is now your past.
Absolutely. Because you may have been there, and that will actually come out the episode after this.
Yeah.
Which is all kinds of confusion and bubble alternate universe and time hole warp things and so forth and all that kind of crazy stuff. But it's interesting. Are there any particular games that you were really have excited that we had played in? I don't even remember what I'm signed up for because I don't know how to get into it.
I was just going to say, I'm going to be honest with you and say that I do not remember all of the games I signed up for, except I am in a Fire and Fury game. And this is the brigade level, not the regimental Fire. And so the original Fire and Fury, it's miniatures for American Civil War. So I'm really looking forward to that. And that is the only one that I can remember that I signed up for. Aren't we in a Test of Honor game? Isn't somebody running Test of Honor on Mike Payne's Hang Eye boards?
I'm just going to say yes, because I don't know how to find out what I'm signed up for. And so...
All right, well...
I might be in, and I might not be. And you used to be able to find out, like, on their website, what you were signed up for and everything. And I don't know if it's because... like pre-registration is closed down. So like I've learned with Total Con, for example, that like I need to screenshot that or write it down somewhere because it goes away and then I can never see it again until the con. And at that point then I'm like, oh, well, how do I get the stuff? And yeah. I think you were the one telling me that you thought that Azah used to send information about like an email saying like what you were signed up for.
I thought you used to get a confirmation email. I could be completely wrong about that, though. I really can't remember. Yeah, I'm on the site now, too, and I think you're right. I can't see.
I know what games we talked about, because I have an email from you and I, where we talked about all sorts of different games. There's like a Scythe game. There was a Scythe game. There was a game called My Grandfather's War. It was 40mm World War I, because that was the theme this year. I feel like the set of rules you had just mentioned that I wasn't able to get into. Cause I think,
I think I was the last person to get in that. It filled up.
Yeah. And, do you remember who was running that?
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't have that down. But I think you might be right that we may have played in Test of Honor cause Chris Redd and Patrick Tuttle were the GMs for that.
Yeah. I'm sure we signed up for that or tried to sign up for it.
Yeah, it sounds like something we would have signed up for.
Yeah.
I guess this is a suggestion that we may have already made by the time people listen to this, to the people at Azah, to make it possible for people to get their events even after the fact. Because like they have the listing up on their website of all the events, but just like knowing what we signed up for, I don't know.
Yeah, it might be we're not smart enough to click the right button to see our registration. I'm not sure, but I definitely am not seeing it here anywhere obvious. But anyway, it doesn't matter. We'll be there and we'll find out what we're registered for when we get there.
Yeah, and so like this year was different for us because normally I will have been going with my family. And so my family skipped out this year. And so it's just you and I and... that means we get to play more games. We get to do stuff. So we didn't run anything, but I think we booked a lot of sessions for games.
Yeah, I think the only time slot we left open was Sunday morning when we're going to do the show.
Yeah. And I feel like I may not have booked anything for the session of your regimental game.
I
think it was a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, possibly. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. So that may have been some free time for me to do the things one does when they have free time at a convention. I don't know, but I'm sure it will have been fun. I just recently learned that they have the designs all set for the t-shirts. And so the t-shirts looked really good. They were only $10, but apparently they might have sold out even if you pre-ordered them. They go through them pretty quickly. And do you usually get a t-shirt when you go?
Oh, yeah. Every year.
They look nice. Only $10, unless you're a club member, in which case this year was free. So that's pretty snazzy.
Yeah.
What else do we want to talk about today?
I don't want to talk about anything else.
Okay.
It's just been a long week.
Well, I'm sure the listeners were very happy to hear you because it's been a while. And
Bet a lot of them weren't.
Well, I'll tell you, I got some feedback. People had asked about you and they had hoped things were well and they were looking forward to you coming back. I honestly think people are just sick of hearing me talk.
Oh, I can't imagine that.
You sure? Because flattery will get you nowhere. See, you're supposed to be the deadpan one. You're not supposed to be having all that emotion in what you say.
Oh, was that emotional? I didn't think that was particularly emotional, but
for you.
Well, yeah. Yeah, no, I'm glad to be back. Yeah, man, it's been a long time since we've done a show together. I can't remember.
It has.
Everything has been crazy since middle of March. I mean, you know that. So
yeah, life happens.
Yeah, it does.
Because the last one we did was at the end of January, one game to share, which was when we talked about one game we would share with another gamer.
Oh, wow.
And then we were going to do the one at TotalCon, the TotalCon live show crossover with the Mythfits.
Yep.
And that had not happened. And so now we have this, and then we have the Huzzah episode, and then we'll see how things go with the rest of the year. But I'm actually really excited because not only are you here doing this one, but then we do have that Huzzah live show.
Yep.
So that'll be a lot of fun to do. And then after that, we get an episode that I think I'm more excited about that this one than any other one that we've done so far this year. And that's the one where the people from Dwarven Forge are coming on.
Oh, yeah.
So Stefan Picorni and Nate Taylor are going to be coming on for the 210th episode. They're going to talk about Kickstarter 6. And there's also a smaller Dwarven Forge Kickstarter, which is focused on miniatures for their world of Valoria. And Kickstarter 6 will be another big building thing. And I think what they're doing is I think they're going to go back to caverns and update the original resin cavern set to use the new newer Dwarvenite stuff. And I'm looking around to see if I had any of it out here, but their stuff is so gorgeous. I can't wait to back. Although it's not cheap, but it is worth every penny and then some.
Yeah.
And it'll just be neat because Stefan is a really interesting guy. He's very creative, has a lot of talent with that. And Nate has really good video and audio skills. So he does all the work on their videos for the Kickstarter. And he used to work for a company that did all that kind of stuff for people. And so just kind of see how they're blending all that together. And they have this whole team there that does all the stuff. I think it's going to be a really interesting show. And I'm hoping that you'll be on. I don't know if you're going to be able to or not, but it should be a lot of fun.
If I can, I will be.
It should be neat. What else do we got to do? So we talked about Huzzah. We talked about Armada and how I'm about it, but you think people should get it. Let's thank all of our Patreon backers, everyone over at the Wargaming Recon Army. I got to say, the show wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you and the sponsors and all the listeners. So we get that going on. We do have all the things on our show notes, wargamingrecon.com/WR208. Adrian, what else have you been up to lately? You've been doing any painting or any other hobby stuff?
I haven't touched a paint. Let's see. What is it? It's May. I haven't touched a paintbrush since February.
Wow. That's a long time for you.
Yeah, it is. I really haven't. I go in cycles like this. I haven't been in the mood for gaming stuff. That's why I've been kind of concentrating or trying to get people to concentrate on board games. That's why I was actually supposed to go down and play Bold Action with John tomorrow night. And I was actually even trying to sway him away from that because I have a game from Lock and Load Publishing from their Lock and Load Tactical series called Heroes of the Motherland. It's World War II tactical, obviously Eastern Front, that I want to play. I'm going to bring that along to Huzzah, by the way. Maybe we'll have a chance to give it a shot.
Well, I think you should not bring that, and instead you should bring Advanced Squad Leader so we can finally get that game in.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Well, I'll bring them both, yeah.
I'm going to bring very few games because I've learned my lesson.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. I'll bring them both and we won't play either one. what was I saying? Oh, yeah, board games. So I've been trying to get more into board games because I've got several like that that I've purchased and I want to play and just haven't had the time. But I find I've gone through the rules of it and it's, I want to give it a try. So it's like, but I know he's all hot to play Bold Action. So it's like, anyway.
I do love Bold Action. It's a great game.
Yeah, I'm not playing either one because I forgot it was Mother's Day weekend, so I'm not going to be going down to game. I'm going to be going up to New Hampshire instead. So,
well, I was just going to say, yeah, Mother's Day weekend is
one
that calls.
Yeah, so, but anyway, we'll see how it goes. Maybe we can get it in at Huzzah, but if not, afterwards. The rules are pretty simple.
Cool.
It feels like Squad Leader. It feels like Advanced Squad Leader. It's the same tech. It's got some of the same mechanics. Nowhere near as complex, so sissies like you should be okay playing it.
But see, you told me that ASL wasn't that complex, that it just seems scary, and that really I'll pick it up pretty easily and I'll have a good time with it. So are you saying you lied?
No, ASL is definitely complex. It's just not as complex as you would think looking at the thickness of the rule book.
Okay. All right.
Let me put it this way. The learning curve is a little, I don't even want to say there's a lot of detail to it, like in the rules. But the thing is, a lot of the rules only come into play like once in a blue moon. The core mechanics of the game are, after maybe 2-3 games, you should have most of that down.
Great.
So, yeah.
Well, we can get through at least one game. I'm determined we're going to play at least one game.
All right. Maybe I'll bring one of the starter kits because that would be more manageable than full ASL. So, yeah, I'll bring them both. We'll give it a try.
Yeah. I'm absolutely, whatever we need to do, I'm determined. I don't care if it's like, well, I was going to say if it was like 1 a.m, but you and I are both old men, or at least I feel like an old man and I crash at like 8. But like, I don't care if it's like middle of the day, instead of going out for lunch, we'll get food brought in and like find a table somewhere, find a floor and play on the floor in the hallway. Like, I don't care. We'll just play a game of it.
Yeah, we can give it a try. I'll bring them both and we'll see how it goes.
I've been really, it's funny you mentioned about wanting to play more board games because I've been really just itching to play more 1775. And something about the game, I can't get out of my head. I absolutely love that game. And I wish there were more games like it. There probably are. I'm just not maybe aware of them.
Yeah. No, I enjoy that one too. I would play that. That one's one that's more fun with, like, if you have the full 4 people, it's definitely better than if it's just head to head. But yeah, I would play that anytime.
True. And I really do want to pick up a GMT game. I know I won't have one in time to play there, but I also want to play because I got it for my birthday, so that's been a while ago. But there's people might not know I'm a big Bob Ross fan, which is kind of funny because I'm like as anti Bob Ross ethic as most people think. I'm not chill. I don't have the fro. I'm not like, let's be laid back and hang out in the woods and pet squirrels and things like that. But like, I love the guy. And so my wife got me, there's a Bob Ross board game called The Art of the Chill, where you have to paint paintings in it. And I really want to try this game. I think it'd be a lot of fun. I think it'd be very accessible. But of course, I haven't read the rules or anything. But it looks pretty simple.
That might be a problem for you with the GMT solo play games. You and you alone would have to read the rules. I can't see it happening.
Well, so there's a thing, because I had been looking into this and I was like, oh, you know, I've heard that maybe some of them are kind of hard to break through. And, you know, that Cuba Libre is supposed to be the easier one to kind of start off with, that whole coin system. But I heard there's actually a lot of really good tutorials online, both written out playthrough kind of things, but also video tutorials. I don't know if they're on like the GMT site or if they're on Board Game Geek or if they're just on YouTube or what. But like seeing someone play, I think would be very beneficial so that I can see that. And then I could put the two together, because I've heard one of the problems with these, not just GMT, but these GMT style solo games, is that the rules might say something, but it's not very clear on what that actually means in gameplay. So like, if you have it out in front of you, it might say like you do X, Y, and Z, but it turns out like Y actually is a 40-step process, but maybe you actually only do 2 of those steps, but you don't know that you do those 2 steps. And when you get to them, it might be like flip, you know, activate your whatever, and you're activating the whatever might mean you like flip your deck upside down and you put it in a different pile. but like they never actually say that. They're just like activate the whatever, and so there's no explanation of it anywhere.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's true, but that's just, you know, some of the discussion that I've seen. But I'm told like watching an actual play video kind of helps with that, which is why I think it was great when Gings of Rome came out. They released their 10-part tutorial video series because they're like, it's a completely kind of different style of play for skirmish games and all that kind of stuff. You might not be really familiar with it. This is how we play.
Yeah.
Because like the rules might not always translate well for people. And I don't know about you, but like I'll look at a set of rules and I hone in on like the one meaning that no one else picks up on.
And I'll be like, one.
Well, and that's the thing. Sometimes it is and sometimes it's not. But if it could go either way, but it might not be the way that the designer intended because they didn't write it properly. They didn't clearly specify it. And
but sure, it's the problem is not that you didn't understand it properly.
No, I'm the guy you want playtesting a game because I'm going to find out all the things that don't make sense and things that are wrong or potentially broken and that then need to be fixed because I'm the one who gets people to write better because I'll be like, this doesn't make any sense. You need to rewrite this so it's more logical that it flows better or whatever. And sometimes like game designers don't think that way. There's actually a whole series of articles out now. This is this whole program for writers who want to break into the game design market. And to teach them how to properly write for games so that they don't fall peril to a lot of the pitfalls that game designers fall into. Because game designers are great at designing games. They're not always great at, you know, conveying that information. Kind of like tech people are really great at tech, but they're not great at like usually conveying that tech language into what people who aren't tech people understand. So they might use terms or phrases that like a normal person will be like, what does that mean? And what it really means is like you're just connecting your machine to something. So it's the same thing. Like the game designer is talking about all like the core mechanics and everything, and it makes sense to them because they're using their game designer brain. But like Joe Schmo off the street comes in, and they're like, they don't have the game designer brain, so they don't really get it. So they need like a translator to kind of help them with the writing. So, and if you just have a writer talking with the game designer, sometimes things are lost in translation as well. So you kind of have to smooth it out.
Yeah,
I don't know. But anyway, that's a problem I've found with stuff. But you're right. I will have to do a little extra research because I was all excited. I was like, oh, I'll do a distant plane and I'll get that. And then I started seeing more and more stuff online where like maybe that's not the one to start with. Like if you played a few of the games, it might be but like all the reviews have been great. All the stuff I read, the editorials about it. And it's about a topic that normally wouldn't appeal to me, the whole like war in Afghanistan and everything. But like it sounds fascinating. Just like I think it would capture my interest for a really, really long time. Whereas you talk about Cuba and like the communist revolution and everything, and that does nothing for me. But like apparently I might have to slog through that to get into the whole coin system. But who knows? Maybe I'll love it.
Maybe
you know, like there we go. And but they do have one coming out that I actually really, really am excited for. It's called Mr. President, and it's another solo game. And actually, it's only solo. You can't do multiplayer where you are the role of a U.S. president. And it's not the whole normal kind of politic game where you have to get elected to an office. It's you're elected. Now, what do? So it's a resource management thing where you never have enough resources to accomplish what you need to do. So you have to try to prioritize, get the appropriate things done without having too much blowback. And so you have to form deals with Congress and you have to have your constituents and the lobbyists and all that kind of stuff, just like now. But like, I think it's a wake-up call for a lot of people who thinks like, well, the president's the most powerful person ever and we can do whatever, but like they really can't. So that's what I'm looking forward to. But I don't even know if it's out in pre-order yet, but I'm hopeful for it.
Okay.
Well, anyway, how can people stay up to date with you and see what's going on with you?
They can't. First of all, why would they want to?
Well, you're on the Twitterer and...
Yeah, I don't post on Twitter though. Mostly I just read.
It's a news source.
Basically.
Yeah.
Through the Wargaming Recon Facebook page would be the best way if they really wanted to reach out.
Or at conventions like Huzzah, right?
If you happen to be there.
Cool. Well, I appreciate you making the time to come on for this episode, Adrian. It's
been a blast. No, yeah, it has been.
So we'll have to find other things that I can bash and that you can then lift up, which is unusual because it's usually the other way around.
It is often the other way around. I just, I don't know. We're kind of on different sides for Armada, but I think it's totally worth the money for other people, not for me.
Well, and it's funny because I almost never meet a Star Wars product that I don't like.
Yeah, no.
And like the game was great, but like I don't see it being worth people spending money on, yeah. Which is weird. And maybe I'll swing around the other side, and I'm sure listeners will be like, John, you're wrong. And then I'll get feedback that explains why. And maybe I am wrong. I don't know, but I don't think I am. Not at the moment. But I'm fluid. I can choose to identify as one who likes it or not like it at a later point in time.
You certainly can.
I can. Well, I want to thank everyone for listening to this episode of Wargaming Recon and remind you that you can get the show notes at wargamingrecon.com/WR208. They'll also have an Amazon affiliate link to Star Wars Armada that won't cost you anything extra, but the people over at Amazon will send a little bit of money our way as thanks for sending you their way. So you can pick up the game. Maybe you're going to love it. Maybe it's something that you just need to have. And you'll get a lot of playing with your friends and everyone. So check out our show notes. And I also want to thank our editor and buddy, excuse me, from the land down under, Joshua, for all of his hard work on previous episodes and moving forward on doing the audio and the show notes. We sound as good as we do because of him. So thank you all for listening to this. And remember, no matter how busy you are, no matter what's going on in your life, no matter how many starships you're blowing up in Star Wars Armada, you know you have to, you gotta, you need to keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. Visit WargamingRecon.com/TSRPN for more information and to learn about the other good shows on the network. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Wargaming Recon is made possible by listeners like you. Become a Patreon backer to get behind-the-scenes content and new episodes before everyone else, starting at $1 per month. Visit wargamingrecon.com/Patreon to become a Patreon backer. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Enfilade. Enfilade is a flagship historical wargaming convention for the Northwest Historical Miniature Gaming Society. Enfilade is held annually over Memorial Day weekend at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Enjoy the largest historical miniature gaming convention west of the Mississippi at Enfilade. Visit www.nhmgscitadel.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 18th through the 20th, 2018, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.